Is your business plan very unclear and you're tirelessly working at a low-paying career? Let's help you get out of the rut and let go of the fear. It's time to excel into the million-dollar stratosphere. Now, here's your host of The Balanced Millionaire, who will take you there, Eileen Mendel.
Everyone, my name is Eileen Mendel, and I am your host of The Balanced Millionaire. On my show, you will learn from industry experts on how to catapult your business, as well as effectively get the financial resources that are available to help you with your business needs. Without further delay, let me share with you about our first guest. Our first guest is Terry Cochran. She is an integrative health practitioner and thought leader in functional nutrition. She received her Bachelor of Science degree with honors from the University of Florida, and she is a graduate of the Huntington College of Health Sciences, the National Leadership Institute. She also has extensive certifications and experience in holistic medicinal practice, such as Healing Touch, craniosacral therapy, meditation techniques, certified coaching, and herbology. She has since developed her own methodology called the Cochran Method, which we'll hear about more today, which integrates biophysics and nutrigenomics, epigenetics, musculoskeletal observation, and listening to develop a bio-individualized plan for her clients. She is a writer, speaker, and maintains a nationally read blog and radio presence. Terry is currently in private practice in the Metro DC area, where she specializes in biotoxin illness, Lyme disease, endocrine disorders, infertility, autoimmune illness, including thyroid conditions, diabetes, and cancer. She also specializes in elite athletic performance. She serves as a nutritionist to ballerina and Olympic hopefuls, including Madeline Donahue, who is considered one of the most promising young swimmers in the country. Welcome, Terry. Welcome to our show today.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. So, Terry, why did you start your practice in the first place? Can you give us a little background on that?
Sure, I'd love to. Well, I had a corporate career for 20 years. In my last tour of duty in corporate America, I ran a business unit for Freddie Mac and their multifamily division. But when my son was 3, we were told to expect brain seizures, failure to thrive. And by the age of 5, we were constantly living in the hospital. So I made it my night job to try to figure out why my son was failing when doctors across the Metro DC area could not solve his health puzzle. So I became a rabid researcher, and I had an epiphany saying, oh my gosh, it's what we're feeding him, and his endocrine system is failing. And within 5 days of shifting his food, he started breathing a little bit better. Then he started talking and walking. And so he was my first and my most important client. And I was a risk manager for millions and millions, if not billions, of assets. And then I became a risk manager for his health. So I decided to leave my career, go back to school, and start a little practice initially out of my home. And now we see people from all over the world.
Wow. Now, when was it that you started your business? What was the time frame? And you said that you switched careers. So how long ago did this get started?
In 2005, I hung my shingle, if you will. So it's been, you know, nearly 15 years.
Wow. And along the way, what were some of the key challenges that you faced in getting your practice going?
Well, I came from a corporate arena in institutional finance and strategic thinking. I had no entree into the world of healthcare. So I started small, and it was just me. I was a sole proprietor. But I had a sense that what I was doing was very important. And so my first client, which was actually my thesis, had hepatitis B. And 18 months later, his hepatitis B was gone. And he was the music director at our church. So when that news got out, people wanted to start coming to see me for nutritional advice. And then I belonged to a yoga studio, and I talked to the yoga teacher, helped her. And so my business has grown organically. And so I guess one of the challenges is to really enter a field that was so different than my original training. But I just never had fear around it. I just knew that I was going to keep doing what I needed to do. I was going to keep growing in my learning. It was going to be an iterative process. And I just had real faith in the work that I was doing.
So you were pretty much self-motivated, and you weren't going to let anything stop you, it sounds like.
Exactly. I wanted to be that parent for other parents that were told you don't have any hope with your child.
And that happens quite often with traditional medicine. You mentioned a few cases where healing took place when people had very devastating illnesses. Can you talk about one particular case that came up where everything kind of turned around for the patient? And
sure. Yeah, I'd like to. Well, actually, Madeline Donahoe, which you mentioned in your introduction, she came to see me as a 12-year-old good swimmer who had had alopecia totalis, and that's when you lose all of your hair throughout her body. Not only did her hair come back, but her swimming time dropped so much in the water that she went from a good athlete to a phenom. And she's been working with me for about 5 years now. And just 18 months ago, the alopecia returned. And we figured out that in that case, there was a viral load. We balanced the virus, and her hair is back and beautiful. And she actually just went to the Olympics for 18 and under in Venezuela just a few weeks back. So this is a story of twice what was impossible emerged, victorious, if you will. And not only is she a beautiful, a talented athlete, but she no longer has alopecia.
Can you describe some of the things, without getting into anything personal, that you were able to do for her that traditional medicine could never have delivered?
Well, I mean, we really got down to the food. She was eating the wrong foods. We realized she had a sensitivity to dairy and to sulfur, which is healthy foods like broccoli and cauliflower and the ever popular kale salad. We realized there was some bacterial imbalance. So peanut butter, which is so prominent on athletes' kitchen tables, was really hurting her and dysregulating her insulin. And so most doctors don't know that peanut butter is an aflatoxin, and it can dysregulate the strep antibody in the pancreas, therefore creating insulin disruption. And in her case, the insulin disruption had an effect on her hair.
Wow. So all of that, and how much testing did you go through with her to find all this out ultimately?
Well, that's a great question. My Cochrane method, it's a proprietary method that I've developed, which really incorporates applied kinesiology in a way that I've refined it, and it combines observation, and we look at our genes. And so we did our testing, if you will, air quotes, in-house. Now, I'm not a medical doctor, so I'm not effectively allowed to diagnose, but we talk in the language of imbalances and supporting and balancing the body. And so that's what we did for her.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the Cochrane method? I don't want to tell anything proprietary, but it just in general, how it all works.
Well, the Cochrane method is a method that I use to look at each one of my clients. I have a naturopathic doctor that also works in my practice, and I've trained her under the Cochrane method. And we look at the fact that we are foundationally rooted by our genetics, and then what expresses those genes. So I look at pathogens, I look at environmental factors, I look at emotional factors, and I look at a physical impact to the body as portals as to why a gene can be expressed, therefore causing symptomology. And so if we know the why, we can unwind it and bring balance back to the body.
So are these tests are they very qualitative, or is it the patient answers questions and you probe deeper? How does that work?
It's both. So if they've had blood work, we ask them to give us their blood work, but usually it's a very intentional questionnaire that we prepare for them. And for example, my last client right before we started this interview was brought to me by one of the top Lyme specialists in the Metro DC area. And so they had a lot of labs that they brought with me, but they regularly send us their patients. And so we just work differently, and we work from a why did this imbalance occur? And was it really Lyme? Was it a viral load? And we can ask them to support us collaboratively and work together to say, well, have you thought about looking at this? And so we either work collaboratively with doctors, or we do our in-house testing, which really gets to a very granular level of why this imbalance is occurring in the body.
So you really dig very, very deeply into, a lot of aspects that most practitioners don't dig into. So how long does it take generally from diagnosis to you seeing healing using your Cochrane method? How long would a patient be seeing results?
Yeah, and we like to say we don't diagnose. We feed back to you what your body is telling us. And then, why the imbalances are being created. But typically we see very complex cases, anywhere from diabetes to autoimmunity to thyroid conditions to insulin disruption and high blood pressure and so forth, and also weight management, and then any chronic illness, fibromyalgia and so forth. And typically we say we like to be free in 3, means that you've graduated our first level through our practice. And the first level is, well, you've rebalanced the reason why you came in to see us in the first place. So yes, I do work with end stage cancer. In those cases, I see those clients regularly. But today I saw one of my graduates. He had end stage amyloidosis, which is a rare form of cancer. He was given his last rites. He's cancer free six years later. And he was telling me, he's feeling back to his old self, pre-cancer, pre-stroke, pre-congestive heart and kidney failure as a result of his chemo. And he's cancer free. So, food is, we call food the alpha and the omega, because you can get everything else right. And if you're giving the body the wrong food, we know that the world of nutrigenomics, which is how genes are expressed by the foods we eat, can really have a huge impact on the quality of our health.
Can you explain that even further for our audience that's not familiar with nutrigenomics?
Sure. Well, nutrigenomics is the fact that food has the ability to turn on or off a gene expression. We all have genes, and there may be, we have certain polymorphisms or gene defects, if you will, that are impacted by certain things. So, for example, I have the CBS gene, which doesn't process sulfur very well. If I ate broccoli and kale and cabbage all the time, my joints would really hurt, because that has to do with arthritis. 73% of rheumatoid arthritis has been linked to an impaired sulfur processing mechanism. If I have an FUT2 gene expression, then I'm not a good candidate for taking probiotics, and I do have that gene. If I have the MAOA gene expression, then I'm not a good candidate for taking an SSRI, because my body doesn't break down serotonin very well. Now, luckily, a lot of psychologists and psychiatrists are now using a couple of genetic helpers to help discern what and how their patients should be medicated. And I really suggest to anyone that's on any kind of antidepressant or anti-anxiety medication, you get your genes tested. That really helps dial in on, are you taking the wrong or the right thing for you from a pharmacological perspective.
Now, when you say get your genes tested, is that like 23andMe or where does one go?
Specifically, yes, for more of the broader, but specifically as it relates to pharmacotropic drugs or psychotropic drugs, excuse me, there are two tests, GenoMind and GeneSight, which are readily available by your healthcare practitioners that would be dispensing those medications. And I really, really encourage all of my clients who are on any kind of pharmacotropic drug or a psychotropic drug, rather, that they get themselves tested because you may be on the wrong thing for your genetics.
Now, you had mentioned this gentleman that was cured of his cancer. Was that in conjunction with traditional medicine, or was that, did he stop the chemo after he got on the right supplements and food?
Right. So again, in our practice, we can't say cured. We say rebalanced.
Rebalanced.
Yes. So his second round of chemo had caused congestive heart and kidney failure. And so he was too weak to do chemo. So through food, we were able to bring his body up to a level of strength, food and supplementation that allowed him to then continue his chemo. He got better. His light chains, which were an indicator of the amyloid content around his heart, came back to normal within just a few months. So he's just a really wonderful testimony of the body's ability to really defy odds if you give it the right thing.
That is amazing. And what about, I have met someone who had hepatitis and the hepatitis came back again, and is there any hope for somebody who's carrying that hepatitis virus? I guess it's hepatitis C, I believe.
Yeah, so viruses are like, we look at viruses like genetic expressions. And so viruses, once we have them, we develop antibodies, but they can be reactivated. And clinical studies show that the most reliable source of a reactivation is stress. And so that's why viruses can light up again, like a Christmas tree in your body, or another pathogen that strikes its match. Yes, viruses can come and go. That's why it's so important to have a very robust immune system based on your genetic blueprint. Because, for example, turmeric, which is considered such an anti-inflammatory, my genes can't tolerate turmeric. Turmeric, instead of an antioxidant, becomes a pro-oxidant for me and causes huge inflammation rather than less inflammation. So we're all different. We all have to know who we are and why we are and how we are. And then we can really design a personalized roadmap to manage optimal health.
So if someone is taking care of themselves in terms of eating organic food and doing everything what is considered to be right, it still may not be the answer to getting the optimal health. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. I mean, and there's a lot of big, talk around broccoli and kale and these sulfuric compounds, which are so anti-cancer, and they are, and they can be, but if you don't have the right genetics, and unfortunately, this is a new phenomenon, the Roundup sprayed on our crops, in particular wheat, has disrupted the body's ability to process sulfur. And this is out of the work of a brilliant biochemist, Dr. Stephanie Seneff out of MIT. She has so much clinical evidence around that. And so we individuals, myself included, with those predispositions who could have eaten sulfur, right? That I ate it all my life into my 40s. I can't eat it anymore because I've hit a tipping point with the glyphosate that's surrounding our, American lifestyle. Even if I don't eat non-organic, it still cross-contaminates. So I have to be very vigilant around that. And I wrote a book, The Wildatarian Diet, Living as Nature Intended, which really allows you to take a quiz and figure out who you are and how to eat. And recipes are geared towards the four archetypes that I've established, a regular wildatarian, which a low sulfur, a low fat, and a low sulfur, low fat wildatarian. Wildatarian being stemming from eating as nature intended, because the animals that we grow now, unfortunately, is anything but what nature intended. They've been fed hormones and antibiotics, and crowded, and we know that these conditions now create indigestible proteins in their tissue. And when we eat them, it creates indigestible proteins in our bodies, which then can contribute to multiple diseases in our country, including diabetes and kidney disease and cancer and beta amyloids that we talk about in the form of Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and so forth.
Where can people get the book so that they can learn more about themselves, and then how can they contact you directly?
Well, you can get the book on Amazon. It's called The Wildatarian Diet, Living as Nature Intended, and it's both available on paperback and on Kindle. And then you can take a quiz on my website, and my website is just terricochrane.com, T-E-R-I, Cochrane, C-O-C-H-R-A-N-E.com. The quiz is there. It'll tell you a lot about who we are, how we work, what we offer. And again, we see people literally from all over the world. They fly in here into the Metro DC area. We're 10 minutes from Dulles International. We see people nationally. And we have, we have a big, of course, a big Washington DC contingent of clients.
So, Terry, can you tell us, were there any turning points that shifted your business to a higher level? It sounds like you were going along organically, and then it was just word of mouth that people began to understand that it wasn't, what they were doing was recommended, let's say, by, traditional sources, but then they found out that what they were doing was actually hurting them. How did that connect? How did you connect to these people who, and what turned your business into something that actually is now, it's on a cutting edge, so to speak, of how we heal our bodies?
Great question. Well, I wrote a small book about 7 years ago called Restorative Recipes, a Path to the Essential You. And that book received some press. I was highlighted in the Washington Post. I was on some local media. And that sort of launched me into a different platform of visibility. But then what really catapulted my work was my daughter became life-threateningly ill 5 years ago, and nobody could figure her out. She'd been a botched wisdom tooth, had created sepsis to the brain, and she almost died. The life-saving antibiotic destroyed her gut biome. 5 months later at a ballet conservatory, she was given the wrong supplement for 5 weeks, and she went liver toxic and almost died. So almost died twice. So that really, this otherwise beautiful and healthy young woman, my son had been the kind of the compromised one of the two, became the most compromised, and I took her everywhere across the country, and nobody could figure her out. And that's when I started delving into genetics and why I had this happen to my daughter. And when I did, I made certain discoveries, and I belong to a mastermind of healthcare practitioners. And 2 years ago, somebody came up to me and they said, well, we understand you look at the body very differently. I was invited to participate in the Thyroid Secret, which brought together the top health experts in the world of thyroid. And that was viewed millions of times all over the world. And when that happened, my platform grew ever more. And again, all organically, we became, more and more well-known. And not only well-known, but those that kept coming to see us kept getting better. And so now we collaborate with many doctors across the country that send us their doctors, healthcare practitioners, naturopaths, all over that send us some of their patients. It's just a real honor to be able to kind of hold that stake in the world of healthcare. From a simple perspective, I'm not a doctor, but I'm a body interpreter, and I'm an educator. And those two things, we say nothing is impossible to heal from if you understand why.
Can I ask you, so if someone is, let's say, on the other, another part of the world, and they're very sickly, and they can't come to see you in person, how do they connect with you?
So we asked them to then, in that case, do a 23andMe or another genetic analysis that we then look at, we interpret it, and based on that interpretation, based on their symptomology, and based on our dialogue, we then, you know, recommend a certain protocol for them. And it generally works very well. I think we get within a 90% hit rate. We've had people from Canada, from Norway, from Alaska, from New Zealand, you know, operate in this realm, and they get better. It's not as granular as coming in to see me, but it still provides efficacious results.
So basically, as a patient, I would come in, I'd have the genetic analysis, I'd fill out the forms, you would do, you know, some analysis, and then you would put me on some supplements and some a diet that were I could benefit most from eating certain foods and stay away from other foods. Is that
exactly? Yes.
Okay.
We have a genetic analysis. We do in-house applied kinesiology that gives us certain indicators on whether or not you might have, you know, something expressing in the body. So you don't, if you come see us, you don't have to have a pre-ordered genetic analysis. We look at things, we look at imbalances in office in that realm. But yes, and that's exactly right. So we develop a very personalized plan, and then people come see it. They come back anywhere from 4 to 12 weeks, and we do a follow-up, and then we do the testing again and figure out what's shifted. And then we navigate through the changes of the food. They're typically allowed more and more varied foods, and we'll shift the supplements around based on what's been rebalanced. Our goal is to have food be the most critical piece of how your body responds to your genetics.
And I've heard for the last few years, like let food be your medicine. So that's exactly what you're trying to help people with. Let food be your medicine. Try to get away from poisonous or toxic medications that could actually have side effects.
Yes, exactly. And you know, we're not anti-medication, and we just want to make sure that if the body can do it alone because something hadn't been addressed, let's address what hadn't been addressed.
So we're winding down to the end of our show here, our segment. What is the most important message that you would like to share with our community of listeners?
I really believe that it's important to be your own self-advocate. And if something doesn't feel right to you, if any healthcare practitioner, no matter whether it's me or a medical doctor, whomever, doesn't feel right, question it, get a second opinion, do some research, self-advocate. You know, we've been taught to just say, okay, well, this is what I've been told, so this is what I need to take. And well, maybe you do, but if it doesn't feel right and your body gives us really direct signals, listen to your signals. Don't just discount them.
That's good advice. Be observant of what is going on with your own body, because you know your body is so important, and that is going to, your body's talking to you all the time. Just listen.
Exactly.
Well, thank you very much, Terry. I think I've learned a lot. I hope our listeners have and gotten a lot of value out of this segment. We're going to go to a break, so hang on, everybody, and we'll be right back with our next guest.
Former highly paid corporate insider and expert in scaling businesses for over 3 decades, Eileen Mindell is a serial entrepreneur, business consultant, renowned speaker, and author. Tune into The Balanced Millionaire on bbsradio.com weekly on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Central, and 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to learn the secrets to working fewer hours and achieving financial breakthroughs, increased revenue, and prosperity while maintaining personal and professional balance and harmony. You can also hear us on iTunes, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and Spotify. To schedule a private consultation about your business, call or text 760-450-6133 or visit InnerEdgeInternational.com. 760-450-6133 or visit InnerEdgeInternational.com.
Your health and become essentially germ-free? Scalar Light serves to break apart the molecular bonds of viruses, bacteria, fungi, and parasites in your body. Only a photograph of a person is needed in order to be treated with Scalar Light and eradicate germs from your body. Visit the website
freescalar.net
and upload your photograph as well as the photographs of your family. Everyone will receive 15 days of free Scalar Light treatments, and your germs will be eradicated by this painless and simple Scalar Light process. People from around the world have experienced the benefits of Scalar Light healing, and the testimonies prove just how effective this groundbreaking treatment really is. Visit
freescalar.net
to get started, or call our support desk at 1-800-345-9851 for additional information. That's
freescalar.net.
Or toll free, 1-800-345-9851.
Everyone, we're back from our break. My name is Eileen Mendel with The Balanced Millionaire, and I have today with us our second guest. His name is J.G. Buccella. He is founder of Fierce Women Project, a platform which brings together strong women leaders to share their stories with girls and help them build an expanded sense of what's possible for their futures. JG holds a bachelor's degree in visual art from Brown University and a master's degree in art and education from Harvard University. He has dedicated his life's work to advocating equality for all. He has appeared at the Consortium for Public Education, the Coro Center for Leadership, the Mayor's Council on Youth, Presidential Classroom, universities, corporations, high schools, churches, and many other organizations, as well as on radio and television. Welcome, JG. Welcome to our show today.
Hi, Eileen. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. So can you tell us why you started your new company and tell us what that's all about? I know we gave a little bit of a description on your intro, but give us more details on why you started this firm.
Absolutely, yes. Actually, you know, my background, Eileen, is in arts and education, and it's in also social justice. And really, I had really been focused for a long time on working regarding racial justice and new sort of frameworks and paradigms for how we come together across lines of race and new conversations, different ways to talk about race. And I've always been obsessed with equality. And, you know, I never really did anything specific around gender and women's leadership and engaging men to support women and women leaders. And it honestly, it's interesting because it kind of found me through my art. And I had about 5 years ago, I had actually just done a painting of a painting portrait, you know, as opposed to drawing or whatnot. But it was a painting of a friend, and she really loved it and asked me if she could buy it from me, and I said sure. And then I just painted a couple other portraits of friends and then colleagues, and it kind of took on a life of its own. And what happened was, it was one of those moments where I kind of picked up my head, looked around, and realized that, you know, wow, all these portraits I've done are of some really amazing, strong women leaders, and they're from all different sectors. And, you know, and I thought to myself at that moment, wow, maybe I should do a whole portrait series and just call it the Fierce Women series, because these are some fierce, strong women, and they're awesome leaders, and I love them. They're great. And let's just call it Fierce Women. And so I was excited about that as a portrait series, but then again, it took on a life of its own, and it evolved very organically into this whole platform around leadership, development, mentoring, and really having events. We started having events and partnering with Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, and then Brown University and Harvard University, and a lot of youth serving nonprofits. And really what I found out from talking to a lot of these women leaders was that they really, the things they really valued were leadership, development, and mentoring. And they really valued this idea of being able to share their stories in a way that would impact, inspire, and help young women and girls. And really, so our goal was to bring them together online and offline. So we created these events that were small group settings, these girls who, frankly, otherwise wouldn't even know these women in their community, and get a chance to learn about them and discover them, ask them questions, shake their hands, you know, small group setting. And it was really, really well received. So anyway, that kind of grew over time. But what happened was, a lot of the women said to me, hey, JG, we love Fierce Women. We love the name. We love the concept. We love these events. They're different than regular, like, networking events or mentoring things. We just really love this. But I wish you could get more men engaged. Like, how do we get more men involved in this? How do we get more men to sort of come out and support women leaders and gender equity, women's leadership, and then this idea of this unlimited future for girls and representation matters, getting more images of women of color, all different kinds of women in, you know, visual, whether it's media or wherever, just images and stories. And so how do we get the men involved? And you know, I didn't know. That was really, I didn't know what to say. I said, yeah, okay, that's my assignment. So what do I do? And so I sat with that for a while, and then really I started getting clarity around, I really need to write this as a book. And it was too much to think of a whole huge book. And I thought, let me just do a small book, like a pocketbook, a booklet, and really get this framework out. And that's what gave rise to Bring Your Strength. And Bring Your Strength is a book, and I turned it into a keynote talk and a workshop and a whole corporate training we're doing now from the concepts in the Bring Your Strength book. And really, that was in response. Again, it was very organic. It was in response to this charge from the women, like, okay, get the guys. How do we get the men? And how do we engage them differently? And, you know, it's really a different approach. And I mean, I'd love to share more if you want to hear about it, but it's a different approach to engaging men to support women leaders.
Now, this is a very timely topic with the Me Too movement. When did you actually get your business going? Because I know you said it started with the portraits. So when did you decide to make it into the business?
Well, you know, I had been selling the portraits and ever increasing prices, and actually became a business from actually selling the portraits. It was kind of a hybrid because we're doing events with volunteers. It was kind of like that side of it was kind of a non-profit-y kind of thing with the students. But the women buying the portraits, just like any other artist selling portrait art, you know, that was the business side of it. So it was kind of a hybrid thing. But then I put the book out, last year, and then developed that within the past year and a half. And really, you know, a couple years in with Fierce Women, I connected with my current business partner, Christina Aldon. She's amazing. And she got the concept immediately. You know, my big vision for Fierce Women. And she, like, really left brain, and I'm really right brain. So it's like we're good business partners in that regard. But it was great because I really at a certain point, and my younger sister, my older sister, my wife, the women in my life helped me realize too that I know you want to support and honor women with this series, but wouldn't it make sense for kind of a woman to be leading this as it grows? And I thought, you know, absolutely. And it makes total sense. The Fierce Women, should have a woman CEO and be majority owned and led. So I really kind of, when we formed Fierce Women LLC, I really handed the reins over to Christina as CEO to lead us forward. And so that was really meaningful. And now, so we're building both platforms, still growing both platforms currently. But as far as like coinciding with Me Too, you know, it is very timely and you can't really separate. You know, we're not doing specific work around, hey, here's how you stop sexual harassment. But you can't separate that behavior from company cultures and, you know, women's leadership, pay equity, equal pay, you know, women on boards, representation on corporate boards. It's all connected, you know.
So can you tell me a little bit, how did you meet Christina? Because she is your partner now. And what does she bring mm-hmm. to the table? You said she's a right brain. So how do you guys manage the business together? Because you said you're the left brain, the creative artist, and she's the right brain, more the business person. How did you meet her, and how did you connect with her to develop this concept further for your business?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing because we actually connected through LinkedIn. And it's funny because years back, I really wasn't on LinkedIn, and I wasn't aware of how LinkedIn was really used, and I was on Facebook and other things. But I started using LinkedIn a few years back and connected with a lot of women leaders for Fierce Women Projects through LinkedIn all across the country, and that's how I met Christina. And she's based in Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And when we connected, you know, it was one of those things where she even told me that you know, I never respond to LinkedIn requests, or, you know, I don't have time for that. I'm doing my, you know, she's running her other company and doing stuff. And she doesn't really get into that. She gets requests but she said when she saw what I was doing, she just absolutely loved it and resonated. It fit so much with what she was trying to do with her work from a different perspective. And she was one of the very few people who, again, when I shared my big vision for a Fierce Woman, who got it. She got the big vision for it. So,
can I ask you, what have been the key challenges then in growing your business?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, they always talk. I think some of our challenges are sort of typical startup entrepreneur challenges. You know, it's learning about that whole process and how things always take longer than you think they're going to take. And, you know, that you get excited and you can fall prey to that shiny object syndrome. And then, you know, what's the best strategy? Everyone has an opinion on strategy going forward. And then realizing, you know, at the end of the day, we're a business and it's sales first, and we've got to, you know, and then do we seek investor money or not, or, you know, all those standard entrepreneurship questions. But also with us, it's always, I think, a challenge has been for us to communicate this bigger vision for Fierce Women initially, because everyone thinks it's a nonprofit. So there, you know, so many people said to us, oh yeah, it sounds like a nonprofit. Oh, it's art, so you do paintings, or they didn't get that. No, now the paintings have gone to become more of just like a, you know, a portal, you know, and into this other, you know, this process where the girls discover all these amazing women, that the painting's now just their first contact, and then they read their bio, and then they come to an event. And, you know, so some people, you know, thought, oh, this is just about art. Other people thought, oh, it's like a mentoring program, or, you know, and so many people have said, oh, this is a nonprofit. This is nonprofit, you know, and so that's been a challenge to try to figure out how to communicate better that, you know, this is social entrepreneurship. We're passionate about equality and change and empowering people and all that. And we're business. We have products and services that we sell, you know. So I think that's been a challenge. And then, you know, I think it's always about marketing. You know, that's the other standard thing with both Bring Your Strength and with Fierce Women. It's like, how do you, we just need marketing. We have to get our message out there, you know?
I love the term you use, social entrepreneurship, because that is something, a novel category in business. So can you tell us a little bit more about how you delve deeper? I know you wrote the book, and how do you delve deeper into this topic? What do you actually, how do you connect with the men in the first place to get them to understand how to work and with women in a leadership, you know, to help them evolve into leaders?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, one of the key concepts I have in the book is this idea of what I call the hidden demographic. And I have an image there, which is like a spectrum. And on a spectrum, you know, not all men right now really are receptive to this. You know, you have people on the left end of the spectrum who are actually hostile. You know, what do these women want now? You know, just very hostile. And you come up a little further towards the middle of the spectrum and you get guys who aren't hostile, but it's like, well, hey, why do we have to do another diversity program? I'm tired of people telling me, you know, what I need to change about myself, or, you know, they're just not open. And then you come up a little further towards the center, and then you get guys who, you know, they get it. You know, they're, and I'm talking about leaders who want to be good leaders. They want to be innovative. They embrace change. They're not afraid of change. You know, and they get it, but they don't know, okay, what am I supposed to do? What can I say? What should I not say? I don't want to just, you know, go through a program to learn how not to be so sexist. Isn't there anything more of this? Or like, but I'd like to be part of the solution. I don't know what to do. You know, so those guys in the middle, I think the thing is, it's a huge missed opportunity, because it's a huge untapped resource and a huge potential lever for change. And that's the hidden demographic. And if you keep going on the spectrum more towards the right, then you're going to get way down far into the men who are, you know, coming from, you know, studying, academic activists, people who are in sort of a hardcore academic activist modality of like studying gender equity full time. And that's great. It's important work. But the thing is, most people aren't activists. So it's like, how do we engage the people in the center without watering down the message, which is what a lot of times the activists and academics say, like, hey, you just want to water this down so no one has to really dig into the reality of the issues here. And our approach with Bring Your Strength is, it's not either or, either we water it down or the other. It's both and. It's like, no, we can both do step one, which is this implicit bias training. Everyone's talking about unconscious bias training, where we learn like, hey, I didn't even know I thought that. I carry these unconscious biases because of how we're socialized and the culture we grew up in. And so it's like, yeah, that's important work. And we don't have to candy coat that or water it down. We can go and learn about that. Step one. But then what's step two? And step two, this is what we're doing with Bring Your Strength. It's an invitation. So that's the problem. The work, that's what's been missing in all the diversity inclusion work, is it's not invitational in nature. So the guys get all on the defense, or even the guys who really want to be doing it, it's like, okay, yeah, I'll do this because I don't want to be part of the problem. And so energetically, think about that. Even the guys who are most willing to change and be part of the solution and engage, it's still kind of the energy of that message is still kind of like, okay, guys, come on, we should really do this because it's the right thing to do. Come on, we should really do this. Come on. Which is a very different energy than kind of like an epic call to action, like a powerful invitation that says, guys, hey, you know what? You don't have to leave your masculinity at the door. Come, bring it. Bring your masculinity. Bring your ideas about what it means to be strong as a man, to be strong as a person, as a leader. Bring it all to the table. Come together and co-lead and co-create with these awesome women leaders. And let's build something. Let's make something together. Come on, let's build it. That's a much more exciting, compelling invitation than, hey, guys, we really ought to do this because it's the right thing to do and we should stop being so sexist. So that's, you know, that's the invitation we're putting out there.
So you mentioned this middle group has the huge potential. That's the demographic that you're targeting. Can you give us the specifics on that demographic so the listeners out there can identify themselves? And mm-hmm. then also, once you've identified that for us, how do you get them excited? You know, first identify what that demographic looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, again, these are men who And again, we're talking in the context of leadership, now, and because this has ramifications across society, across sector, you know, for men and women, how in relation, the personal level, in the office, at home, at work. Of course, this has broader implications around men in general and women in general, communicating with one another, and interacting with one another. But for the purposes of our work, we're doing it under an umbrella of leadership. So we're talking about leadership. So men who are in leadership roles, who aspire to be leaders, whether they're CEOs or VPs or other positions, in organizations, who want to be better leaders. So they've gone to a leadership course or seminar, or they've, you know, so they care about good leadership. They care about this idea of 21st century leadership and what that means. And so these are also guys who respect women, and they have women colleagues who they respect. And, you know, again, they see that, of course, women should get paid the same amount of money to do the same work. And it seems so ridiculous that we're even having the conversation, and all the statistics, all the data that shows, well, hey, you know, at this rate, it's going to be another 50 years before women get paid the same for doing the same work. You know, and so even if you're not an activist, even if you're not a man marching down the street saying, you know, equal pay for women, you know, that's great, the men who do that. But even if you're not going to go march, there's so many men who think, yeah, of course they should get paid the same. It's like a no-brainer. And the thing I say, that the litmus test is, imagine this hypothetical conversation. Ask a guy whose daughter's graduating college, and she's about to go in the workforce. And you just say to him, hey, you know what? We're going to, when she graduates and gets her job next month, we're going to pay her about 80% of this guy sitting next to her in class. Is that, you good with that? Is that all right? You good with that? And of course the dad's going to say, that's absurd. Ridiculous. Of course my daughter should be paid the same as this guy next to her in class. It's ridiculous. Now that same guy may be in an office not doing anything to support, you know, pay equity, equal pay in his organization. He doesn't know what he can do or should do, or what's the roadmap. What does that even look like? But of course he believes women should get paid the same. You know, so I think the men who care about leadership, who are smart, progressive people, and when I say progressive, I don't mean from any political part of the spectrum. It has nothing to do with politics or political views, but meaning like intellectually progressive, or who care about innovation in an organization, who embrace change, who understands that, you know, change doesn't have to be scary. It's how we get to the next level. So.
So that's more of a mindset, or is a psychodemographic, or a mindset, or psychographic mindset of the males. You know, so when you're contacting the companies to go in there and give your workshops, do you actually reach out then to give maybe a free presentation, or you have a conversation with a key leader, a male leader, to assess whether, you know, he has the mindset then? Do you have a way to determine it, whether this is the right match to go into this business?
Yeah, that's a great question, Eileen. That's a great question, because initially we were grappling with, well, how do we, and a lot of women are grappling with, well, how do I know who's a real quote-unquote ally in the workplace? Or he may seem like a decent guy, but then maybe he still kind of doesn't get it. Or like, I don't want to mess up my job status if I say the wrong thing, or how do I know who I can trust? And, you know, it's tricky. And we kind of landed on this idea of an invitation, a literal invitation from the people in the organization, and a, like a self-selecting kind of thing. Because just by the language of the, if you have VPs or the head of diversity and inclusion at a hospital or at a law firm or corporation, and they put out this invitation like, hey, we're doing this program, bring your strength, this is what it's about. Different approach, engaging men. The guys who aren't into it aren't going to respond. They're not going to attend. And that's the first thing. We're not doing anything. We're not participating in any sort of compulsory diversity and inclusion program. So this is none of this. It's intentionally, sounds maybe counterintuitive in some ways, but it's intentionally targeting that small subset, that hidden demographic. So it's kind of self-selecting. But as far as our outreach, you know, we have gone to the heads of the organization, the person who's in charge of the diversity inclusion programs, the VP, people have the women's initiatives at law firms or at the hospital. There's a, you know, the vice dean, the vice chair who's doing the diversity and gender programming. So we've reached out to them directly. But now I'm actually excited because we're just now rolling out this one-on-one CEO consulting that I'm going to be doing. And I'm very excited about it because this is really for CEOs of companies who are, again, in the hidden demographic. And you know, all the CEOs are busy. So it's a half hour to 60 minute Zoom consult over Zoom, where they can get the framework and what is this actual framework we're bringing to organizations and what's the actual lexicon, because this language is not being used. It's new word. It's new language. It's a new lexicon that's needed for this framework. And so the CEOs can get their heads around what this is, what this looks like, and then they can hand it off to their VP to sort of implement, you know, but they as CEO can, you know, commit and make the change top down so they really get it and it's not just lip service. And for, again, for the CEOs who care and they want to be part of the solution, it's a way for them. And I also promise that, you know, after this, you'll be able to talk. Another thing besides understanding the framework and how to embed it in your organization is you'll be able to talk about gender equity with confidence and ease. Because we're giving you this new language. And again, not in a stilted way, but a different understanding as a man, as a CEO, as a man, how to talk about gender equity with ease and confidence and coming from a strong place. And really that's a great segue to the central question in our program, which again, very organically evolved. I had had so many conversations with women across the country, across sector. And I had posed them this hypothetical question to them. And I said, you know, if you went into your organization tomorrow and not just one, but a number of the men came to you and said, your male colleagues, and they said, you know, I'm really curious about your leadership style. I'd like to learn about your leadership style. And, you know, I don't want to be just a regular team member here, but I would like to really powerfully. And we're talking about strength and power and how do we collectively redefine strength and power for women and men. So this is what it's all about. So how can I powerfully support your leadership vision? And even if they don't say powerfully, even another version of that is, how can I support your leadership vision? What's a leadership vision? Well, and I asked them, what would you do if your male colleagues asked you, how can I support your leadership vision? And so many of them said to me, well, you know, JG, I can't imagine one colleague asking me that question, let alone a number of them. And I said, well, you know, I understand it's improbable and maybe, but if you felt that they were sincere and they didn't have a hidden agenda, would you welcome that question from them? And almost to a one, the women I've spoken to over the past couple of years have said, absolutely. I'm so emphatic. It'd be incredible. Are you kidding me? If the people on my team, if they asked me that question, they meant it, it would be unbelievable. It would be a game changer. And the kicker is that there are quite a few men, the men in the hidden demographic, there are men who would ask that question. But the other kicker is they don't even know they're allowed to ask that question. They don't even have the language for that question. Who does that? This is not even being done. It's not even a thing. You know, so it's really literally a new lexicon, a new language that's needed. And so when we go in to the organizations, we're actually modeling it, Christina and myself. And then when I'm doing about to do the CEO one-on-one calls, the Zoom calls for them, see, the thing is that can work top down as well. So it's not just a mid-level manager who's male asking his senior, who's a woman, that question, how can I support your leadership vision? It's actually for male CEOs. A male CEO can say from his standpoint, hey, how can I, to his VP, who's a woman, how can I as CEO and as a man support your leadership vision in your division? So what does that look like in your department? What does that look like at me as CEO, really supporting your leadership vision? So that's the work we're doing. And that's the next piece I'm actually really excited about.
Well, that is very intriguing and interesting, because when I was in companies myself, that's a while back, because I've been an entrepreneur, for many, many years. But there was no conversation about gender equality or having women, and men support each other in leadership. So you're actually bringing up a brand new conversation inside corporations that has to be addressed. It needs to be addressed. But we're running out of time. We're running out of time, JG. This has been a fascinating topic. Can you tell the listeners how to get in touch with you and learn more about Fierce Women and Bring Your Strength, and also how to get in touch so that they can actually initiate that in their own companies and with their own employees?
Yes, absolutely. So our website is bringyourstrength.com. And there's contact info on there and everything. It's bringyourstrength.com. And you can also reach out to me directly at JG. My initials, John Gerald, JG. So it's just JG at bringyourstrength.com. But there's a contact form on the site as well. And then as far as Fierce Women Project, we have the main site. We have a couple of the main sites for that site for that right now is fiercewomenproject.com. So they can check out fiercewomenproject.com. And then we have a gallery of the photos, which is another site, which is fiercewomenonline.com. Just fiercewomenonline.com. But the main one is fiercewomenproject.com. But yeah, as far as the rolling out the CEO one-on-ones, definitely get in touch through bringyourstrength.com and other programming for as far as diversity inclusion professionals. And again, hospitals, law firms, tech, and finance, we're going across sector, also reach out, and I'd be happy to talk with anybody for an initial just overview to give them a sense of what's possible.
Well, thank you very much about, telling us about your, new programs, and, it's very, very interesting and very pertinent to today's climate in business and also in nonprofits and government today. So I think you have a role today to play, and I think you're starting a new movement. So thank you very much for being on our show, JG. And yes, it's been wonderful to have you here. I'd like to thank all of our guests today. And I trust that the listeners have found value in their information. And I would like to remind the listeners, if you would like to connect with me for a complimentary chat to discuss taking your company to the next level or getting the financing you need, you can do so by contacting me at info@thebalancedmillionaire.com or go to my website, www.thebalancedmillionaire.com. So thank you, everybody, for listening to today's show. Tell your friends about it and tune in often.
Thanks so much, Eileen. Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
Thank you for tuning into The Balanced Millionaire with your host, Eileen Mendel, CEO of InnerEdge International, business consultant, multimedia marketing expert, renowned speaker and author. Connect with Eileen Mendel, The Balanced Millionaire. Increase your confidence, creativity, balance, awareness, direction, motivation, and catapult your business to the next level and beyond.